The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Tom Fairbanks, my friend on the other side of the glass. It's always nice to have a friend when you're doing a radio show. And even if he is on the other side of the glass.
Maybe it's especially well that I'm on the other side of the glass. I don't know.
I don't know, but it has nothing to do with the coronavirus or the quarantine.
Or flu
or flu any or that. Anything okay. Like that. It's where our control room is located, and Tom is our engineer and producer. And together we give you a very hearty welcome to the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition, February 5th, 2020. Broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted news talk anywhere in the world, live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. We've got you covered with all of our podcasts. They said it was going to be really cold last night. So Ann and I took the advice, spent over an hour covering everything. Even some out in the cactus garden. And I think it was an hour, Tom, that was a good investment because it plunged to 24 degrees up at our hacienda.
And I thought my 29 degree reading was cold.
No, it was pretty cold. So a hard freeze. And the odd thing about it is it started the coldest temperature is 6 to about 9 this morning. So I don't know. I guess that's the way it works. Steve Kasachek is with us. We bring Councilman Kasachek, Democrat, Ward 6, onto the Buckmaster Show. We've pretty much got it worked out now. Steve comes on the program the first Wednesday of the month, which is right now. Councilman, how are you today?
Doing pretty well. Glad to hear that you got enjoying the chilly weather out there.
What does this do to your running schedule?
Nothing. just add a couple more layers. So I was out about 5:30. I left the house, and it was a little bit nippy. But, yeah, not a whole lot of traffic out on the loop this morning, I will say that. A lot of the bike riders and walkers were deciding to take the day off.
And how many miles did you do today?
About a dozen.
Okay.
About a dozen.
The recent retreat, this was an all-hands meeting really for yourself, all of your council members. I think department heads also were involved in this all-day retreat. Pretty much each council member laid out their top five priorities for the city budget. Frankly, I was surprised, Steve, that adding more cops and public safety was not a priority on each of those wish lists. It was on yours, I will say.
Yeah. So here's the deal. When I started doing this back in 2009, the first thing I heard when I walked in the door, and Richard Fimbres is still there. He was there as well. Was we had a $40 million deficit, and it has been 10 years of working through that deficit, and part of the collateral damage was that we had furloughs for some employees, we had some hiring freezes. Net result was that we fell behind in some of our core services. Police and fire academies were two of them. Roads is obviously another one. So when we got to this year's budget, we have a structurally balanced budget. We have about $9 million round numbers in cash carry forward, which is substantially different than when walked in the door. But that doesn't mean that we can start dipping into that $9 million bucks and just start wasting it. It's still taxpayer dollars, and we still have some core needs. My focus will continue to be on some of the really important needs that we have to continue to build up our police force. We have kind of a hire till filled approach to it right now that we have an academy going. We have more planned. Those are tough jobs to fill, though. It's not, and we gave raises. We gave one-time bonuses. We gave compression increases to public safety. Did the Prop 101, which is improving a lot of the cars and the fire stations and cops, police stations, and all the their rolling offices when you talk about the police cars. So what we've seen is some of the officers who jumped ship back when things were tough, 5 or 6 years ago, are actually coming back to the police force. That doesn't mean that we're where we need to be, though. And our police chief, Chris Magnus, understands that, and he's a champion of continuing the academies. So, police and fire academies are two of my priorities. Another one is that we keep our eye on and keep the pedal to the metal on getting the water contamination issue that really is a function of activities out at Davis-Monthan and the Air National Guard cleaned up. We're in litigation on that. That, I think, is the number one regional issue that we have to face. And we have some issues with our recycling program that's hemorrhaging dollars now because of the international market. So I understand that when you have a little bit of money, the tendency is to start dipping into your wish lists. But my sense is that we're not where we need to be in our core responsibilities yet, and that should continue to be our focus.
Any blowback on the chief's decision, Chief Magnus, to withdraw from the Stone Garden funding?
No, I actually support Chris in that. He met with his chief leadership team, and they assessed not only where those dollars were going, but also the fact that we, as well as the county, had applied for humanitarian assistance within the Stone Garden umbrella, and were denied that. There are a lot of dollars being spent right now to house a lot of the asylum seekers out at the Casa Alita Center, the county center. And the city, again, that, as I just mentioned, the PFAS, the water contamination, is a regional issue. That is also a regional issue. And I've had conversations with Chuck Huckleberry and Mike Ortega, city manager, and said that, the county should not be putting the entire load on that. And so I was hopeful that some of the Stone Garden money would go to the humanitarian purposes. There is a component of humanitarian aid built into the Stone Garden application. And so when both we and the county checked those boxes and made the pitch, both of us felt that that was pretty much a slam dunk, given the literally thousands of people who have passed through this community. And not that we were laying out a welcome mat saying, come to Tucson, come to Pima County, but they were coming here, dropped off by Border Patrol, dropped off by ICE, and the taxpayers of this community have been footing that bill. For all the people who say you should be taking Stone Garden, it's the federal money, free dollars. Well, that's also the same group of people who recognize that immigration is a federal issue, and while we are addressing it on the local level, some of those Stone Garden federal dollars ought to be helping to pay for the humanitarian portion.
Have the visitors who have been coming through, they were housed at the former Benedictine Monastery for many months, now over at the former Pima County Juvenile Center. What are you hearing about numbers? Have they dropped off considerably, those numbers, Steve Kosacek?
Yes, they have. And so yesterday I was told that they had about 30 people dropped off by Border Patrol. That is a fairly typical number now. What the federal government has in place is they call it a migrant protection protocol. I think that is absolutely misnamed. There's nothing protective about forcing the people who are coming here seeking asylum to stay in Mexico in areas that we have travel warnings for our own people to not go into. And so the numbers have dropped significantly because the Remain in Mexico policy is keeping people on the Mexican side of the border. It does not mean things are safe in Honduras and El Salvador and Guatemala. It does not mean things are safe in the areas they're being kept or even in humanitarian conditions on the south side of the border. It means none of that. What it means is that the door was slammed on the people, and the folks that we are seeing now at the Alita Center are mothers with infants, people who are pregnant, and people with that's basically it. And so we got about 30 people yesterday. We are continuing to take donations, though, and so of food and clothing and medical supplies and all the kinds of things that right now are being funded. The medical and the food are being funded by the county, but the clothing and some of the other things we're still providing through volunteer efforts. And those supplies are getting to the people in Mexico. It's just a more circuitous route. And frankly, Bill, that center is set up with volunteers, with medical assistance, with food, clothing, shelter, transportation, all the communications infrastructure to connect people with their next of kin, and for it to be sitting virtually vacant while we're keeping people in inhumane conditions on the south side of the border, while we have a community who's willing to step up to the plate and do the work, is to me just indefensible.
Steve Kasacek will stick around for a second segment, but right now, Steve, you know what I really love talking about on the program every day at this time.
So you're heading for Mona's.
Yes.
And I'm going in to get my cholesterol checked in the morning, and assuming the numbers are good, I'll meet you at Mona's.
There you go. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's located northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Owner and chief baker Steve, assisted so ably by his assistant baker, Michael. They get there. I was talking to Michael. I think he gets up at like 3 in the morning or something to make sure everything is up and running so you get your great pastries. The grill is, they open at 6:30. The grill's all fired up, ready to go for those eggs, blueberry pancakes, chocolate chip pancakes. But I shared with our listeners yesterday about the wonderful lunch that the new cook, Jessica is her name. That's with a Y, Jessica. Boy, she made a beautiful hot chicken breast sandwich for me on Sunday, and it was really, really good. Mona's Danish Bakery, open right now for lunch at monasdanishbakery.com is their website, and of course there's a link at buckmastershow.com. We'll be back with Steve Kasacek if you would like to join the conversation. 790-2040. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Biosphere 2's new ocean tour takes you behind the scenes of the largest experimental ocean in the world, researching solutions for the global coral reef crisis. Other exciting tours include the amazing 30-year history, a family tour for families with kids 10 and under, and the inspiring Under the Glass tour, one of the 50 must-see wonders of the world. Visit UA Biosphere 2 today. Explore the future. Online giving for coral reef research and information about tours and more at biosphere2.org. The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026, and the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
This is Bill Buckmaster, and you know how I love to travel. I've always searched for that new destination or travel experience that makes life so special. And I looked to Ryan Hansen of Bon Voyage Travel for insight on current travel trends.
This is Ryan Hansen, and I'd like to personally invite your listeners to the Bon Voyage Travel Showcase. Over 40 travel partners will be on hand to answer all the individual travel questions that you have. Bill, you and I are going to team up for a joint presentation to help your listeners discover all the world has to offer.
I'm looking forward to it, Ryan. And talking about the inspiration behind my lifetime of travel to more than 100 countries.
Join us on February 16th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Hilton El Conquistador for Bon Voyage's free travel showcase.
And look no further, the folks at Bon Voyage will help you plan that perfect journey.
Be sure to visit bvtravel.com to RSVP.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. To the strains of the bump music 8 miles high by the Doors, this portion of the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio is presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, just a 3-hour drive from Tucson. Coming up this weekend, Saturday is the Chocolate Fantasia. It's a chocolate day in Silver City. If you're into chocolate, and who isn't, it's worth that 3-hour drive. Good starting place? Visit southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find the complete listing of many great places to stay and all sorts of recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. We continue now with our conversation with the Ward 6 Democrat Councilman Steve Kasachek. What is this I'm hearing, Steve, about the city is going to get aggressive going after people with parking violations? In fact, there will now be a 3-strike policy. What happens when you strike out?
Well, that policy is not new. That policy is on the books, and it simply means this: we're going to start, what you're seeing is that we're simply going to start enforcing the policy that's already on the books. And every year, we write off a considerable amount of debt. A portion of that debt is unpaid traffic fines. At some point, the city turns those over to a collection agency, and at some point, they become just cost you more to chase them than to collect them. So, what we're doing is we're saying right now, if you have 3 unpaid traffic fines, we're going to start implementing the policy that's already on the books, and you'll get a boot. Now, this is not a boot that you see on people's tires. It's called a windshield boot, and they're used in some other jurisdictions. They're used around Texas and some other cities, but mainly it's a European thing that slaps on the windshield when you get your third parking violation. And in order to have it removed, you need to contact city court. It's all operated through the court system, not through our Park Tucson group, and go and make arrangements to either pay the fines or begin a payment plan or whatever it might be. But the city is just in a situation where we're saying, look, the parking rules are on the books for everybody, and you just can't ignore them. And the third bite at the apple, we're going to hold you accountable for it.
Wow. This device, then, so this is not really a new policy.
No. The laws aren't new, and the 3 strikes you're out is not new either. It's just that we've been kind of turning a blind eye to it, and Park Tucson is trying to fund parking structures. They've put meters in around 4th Avenue downtown to try and churn customers through. Some of the merchants in those areas were actually complaining that some of their own employees were parking for their 8-hour work shift and their customers couldn't get in. So there are lots of moving pieces to this, and they're You know, so the conclusion is, let's just start implementing the policies that are on the book and hold people accountable.
What is happening with your recycling program that you went into a lot of detail, and I'm glad you did? This is the glass crushing program that you did this kind of test over the holidays. Is that moving forward?
Yeah, so I've still got it. Still in the Ward 6 garage. We're still receiving. I had some people bring in almost 600 champagne bottles last weekend. So I've got my work cut out for me. But the real point is that I have met with city leadership, General Services Department, Environmental Services, Transportation, City Manager. And we sat down and we said, look, is it time to take this to the next level or not? We've demonstrated that we can create a legitimate secondary market. If you walk into the Ward 6 office now, the concrete slabs out in front were all made with the sand that was created by the crushed bottles in the garage. So we've demonstrated that. We had some Department of Corrections guys over last week, and they used... had about 140 gallons of the sand, and they filled sandbags. The city gives away over 2,000 sandbags a year during monsoon season, and we use thousands of them a year during our Operation Splash during the monsoon. We buy all that sand from a quarry. And so the conclusion was that, yes, we've demonstrated that there's a market. The challenge will be, how do we set up an efficient collection system? Is that a second bin at the curb? That could be expensive for environmental services because it means a second truck will have to go by. Is it dispersed collection sites around town? The question there is, will the community participate in the level that we need to make it viable? So the idea is sold. You know, we recognize that we're losing $500,000 selling glass to our recycler at a loss. So that's unacceptable. Number two is, we recognize that there is a legitimate secondary market. Demonstrated that. It can be concrete. It can be sandbags. It can be asphalt. It can be all of the above. Lining trenches when they're laying pipes for some of our roadway projects. So there's a use for this stuff. The question now is, how do we collect it? How do we collect it in quantities sufficient to make it pay its own weight? I have provided to city staff the specs for a glass crusher that can do 1 to 2 tons per hour. So what we're doing is, on February the 21st, I'm hosting a meeting at the ward office at 6 o'clock, and we're inviting the public with the city leadership to come and brainstorm. You know, how do you want to move this forward? What's the process that we're going to use to continue to collect the glass in the quantities that we need to, and make it so that we're not losing $500,000 and put these products to a good use?
I know you're a huge basketball fan. When was the last time we had the women and the men's teams, well, both in the top 25, doing so well?
I think it's like never that I can recall. Joan Bonbassini might have been the women's coach at the time, and that was probably right in the early part of Lute's tenure. But we have the women going on the road to the Oregon schools. Recognize that the Pac-12 in women's basketball at the start of the year, I believe it was four or five teams were ranked in the top 10, and I know five or six were ranked in the top 20, Arizona being one of them. So they're going to the Oregon schools this week. Those are like ranked three and four in the country right now. Oregon just knocked off UConn a couple nights ago on the road. Did I lose you?
No, we're still there.
Okay. And the men are hosting USC and UCLA. So it's great to see the... great to see both teams doing well. It's really great to see the fans turning out. IDEA had 5,000 and 7,000 people, respectively, last weekend's games. We had over 10,000 for ASU. So she's just a wonderful person, and the program is great. The fans are turning out, and it's cool to see it happen.
Are you hearing anything about the Gem Show? How any feedback you're getting on how this year's showcase is going?
Yeah, I was down at the TCC a week ago, I guess it was last Friday, and for the kickoff of that, and spoke to five or six of the dealers, and they're thrilled. They're really thrilled seeing that there are two hotels going in right around the convention center. They're really thrilled seeing that Rio Nuevo is putting $65 million into that facility. But we're up north of 50 different shows around town right now during this season. So it's about $130 to $135 million economic boost to the community. And, yeah, the vendors are happy to be here. Up until yesterday, the weather was perfect, and, you know, they can bundle up a little bit and enjoy the chill while it's here. But no, this is a significant economic boost to this region. And between the city manager's office and Visit Tucson, they're really rolling out the red carpet for the vendors.
All right, Steve Kasachek, we will look forward to our visit with you in March. Thank you very much, Steve.
Perfect. Thanks for the time.
Steve Kasachek is the Ward 6 Democrat councilman here in the city of Tucson. He was talking about, at least with him, priorities certainly. Each council person laid out their five priorities, and Councilman Kasachek saying, yeah, adding more cops has to be in that top five as far as he's concerned. It's the midway point of the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Be right back. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Biosphere 2's new ocean tour takes you behind the scenes of the largest experimental ocean in the world, researching solutions for the global coral reef crisis. Other exciting tours include the amazing 30-year history, a family tour for families with kids 10 and under, and the inspiring Under the Glass tour, one of the 50 must-see wonders of the world. Visit UA Biosphere 2 today. Explore the future. Online giving for coral reef research and information about tours and more at biosphere2.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition. This portion of the Buckmaster Show presented by our friends over at Green Things. And, of course, they've got the Zocalo Village component. For years, Zocalo Village, they had a great reputation, still do. They were over at Country Club in Broadway, and now they're part of the Green Things family at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. It's a 13-acre site, home to every imaginable plant that grows in our area, and great merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. You can visit the five, and we urge you to tour the five shops at Zocalo Village. Here are the websites, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Coming up this Saturday, it's a big event. It's Fort Lowell Day 2020. Tom Collier is here from the Old Fort Lowell Neighborhood Association. Tom, it's a big year for, I think, what? A big anniversary year for the Fort Lowell people.
It's the 40th anniversary of Fort Lowell Day, Bill. And by the way, let me wish you happy anniversary on your 10th year.
Yes.
So we can congratulate each other here.
Yep, we're launched into year number 10 here on the Buckmaster Show. How did all of this come about, the whole idea of doing kind of a day where you look back at a very rich history of our area?
The people who live in the neighborhood, the Fort Lowell neighborhood, around which grew up around the old military post Fort Lowell, which served from about 1870 until 1891 when it was decommissioned, are very proud of the area. There has been human habitation in that part of Tucson since pre-Columbian times. There are Hohokam pit houses. There are Hohokam archaeological sites. The Fort Lowell neighborhood itself has sort of evolved around the fort, and it continues to evolve. The neighborhood is in an area roughly north of the Tucson Medical Center is the quickest way to describe where it is if you aren't familiar with the layout of Tucson, and just south of the river. But the people who grew up in the area are very proud of the area. It's a nature reserve. Name the things that can happen in a neighborhood. It happens in the Fort Lowell area. It's an artist colony. The Fort Lowell Park was owned by the Boy Scouts, and that was their Boy Scout camp.
Really?
When there was open desert between Tucson and Fort Lowell way back when.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of history, and recognizing that there is a lot of history, the people in the Fort Lowell area formed the Fort Lowell Neighborhood Association, the old Fort Lowell Neighborhood Association, a number of years ago. I don't know the exact date. That's why I'm edging.
Right.
But we decided that it was something to share with the community overall. So this is the 40th anniversary of Fort Lowell Day. It's a lot of stuff to see and do. It's not just go to a museum. It's a hands-on thing. Bring the kids, because one of the things you can do is make an adobe brick. You can actually play in the mud at Fort Lowell Day.
Bring your walking shoes.
Yeah, absolutely, because Fort Lowell Road from Craycroft to Beverly will be closed off, and it'll be a pedestrian mall.
Okay.
Many of the homes in that area date back to the Fort Lowell Day and Fort Lowell times when Fort Lowell was active. In fact, there are two buildings. If you've ever driven past Fort Lowell in the intersection of Fort Lowell and Craycroft, and you've seen that big adobe building and wondered, what's in that? What's it like? Mm-hmm. Well, three of the rooms are going to be open. So you can stop by, and that was the old quartermaster house, a store room, and you can see what it was actually like. Now, it's been renovated and turned into apartments, and of course, we're talking 100-plus years, but the exterior is still essentially the same as it was when the cavalry was there.
So the fort was decommissioned. I believe it was the last fort to be constructed in the so-called Apache Wars.
Right.
And then it was decommissioned in 1891. What was the thinking when it was decommissioned? What do we do with this now?
Well, what they did with it was they just abandoned it. Originally, there was Camp Lowell inside the city limits of Tucson, but cavalry soldiers of the time were, how shall we say this, rowdy. So they decided to move it out 7 miles away, the heck out in the desert. But at that time, the confluence of Tenca Verde Creek, Pantano Wash, and Rieto all came together to form the Rieto. And there was running water out there at that time. So that was an ideal place to put the fort. It was ideally to protect Tucson. When you say Fort Lowell, it's not just that area that you drive through. The Fort Lowell Park, the current Fort Lowell Park, that big open space area used to be the parade ground for where the majority of the people live. But Fort Lowell Park covered Fort Lowell as a military reservation covered, I believe it's an 8 square mile area. They went all the way out to the Rincon Mountains, where their area of responsibility was. Mm-hmm. But the actual core where people lived was in the vicinity of where Fort Lowell Park is right now. The Army abandoned it in 1891, decommissioned it, and then abandoned it. And one of the things that happened, because that good water was still there in the river at that time, a community evolved of Mexican farmers moving up from northern Sonora, mostly the Naco and I believe the Arizpe area, according to the studies that have been done of the ancestry. And they started little truck gardens to grow vegetables and things like that to supply the city of Tucson. So the community of El Fuerte rose, and it prospered at least until World War II. And then, of course, the city of Tucson grew out and around to encompass it. There was an attempt to start an artist colony. One of the things that is unique to our area, to the Fort Lowell area, is the San Pedro Chapel. Now, it was not a part of the fort, but it was a church and a chapel which was built to accommodate Catholic masses for the majority of the people who were there, who were Roman Catholic. And this is actually the second iteration of the chapel. If you're driving down Fort Lowell Road in about the 5,000 block, if you look to the south, you can see the chapel over there. Mm-hmm. That is the community center now. The community, the old Fort Lowell Neighborhood Association, bought that chapel, and we use it for community events. It's also, if you'll forgive me, a plug. It's available for rentals. It's a wonderful wedding venue.
Mm-hmm. How old is that chapel?
That particular building dates to the 30s. There was one previously which was destroyed in, believe it or not, a tornado in the 20s.
Wow.
So that's the second, or maybe the third. The other thing that I think is really interesting, and you can find this on the walking tour, is La Capillita, which is, once again, a reconstructed building, and it's maybe 4x4, 6x6 building made out of adobe brick. But in 2015, for its 100th anniversary, it was the spot where the settlers, the people in El Fuerte, had a priest come out from Tucson, and they would celebrate an outdoor mass there. Wow. But for 2015, that was the 100th anniversary of La Capillita, and it obtained an apostolic blessing from Pope Francis. And so that's framed and in the building there. So it's an opportunity.
All right, Tom, give us the details about what we need to know about Saturday if we'd like to visit. I hope folks do.
Well, you can pretty much leave your wallet behind unless you're going to eat at the food trucks, because everything is free. There's no admission. There's no activity charge or anything. There's just so much to see and to do.
Website would be a way to do it.
A website, we have a Facebook page, Fort Lowell Day Facebook page, but we're going to be raising the flag with the Arizona Brass Band, the old Arizona Brass Band. That's at noon. This is all from noon to 4.
Mm-hmm.
The Fort Lowell Museum is open. You can walk around a lot of the restored areas. My two favorite things, and I'm going to plug these right now, are, first of all, the cavalry, the Memorial Cavalry Troop, Troop B, that comes up from Fort Huachuca. This is a dedicated group of people, some active duty at Fort Huachuca, some retired, some dependents, who train and maintain their own horses.
Really?
And they do the active horse cavalry drills that, because we don't have horse cavalry anymore,
but these
would have been
very authentic, right?
Okay. Every time there's a change of command down at Fort Huachuca, this particular unit puts on a cavalry charge.
Wow, cool.
to honor the new commander.
How many are in that unit, do you
know? I don't know. It varies, of course, because you have people moving in and out of Fort Huachuca on permanent change of station.
There's probably
and
at least
like
a
that.
Dozen, right?
But it's all volunteer. These are their horses. The only other horse unit in, I believe, the United States Army that gets federal funds, that gets funding, is the unit at Arlington National Cemetery.
Oh.
So these guys do this voluntarily, and they preserve the tactics and the training that cavalry riders, cavalrymen, went through in the late 19th century, because that was how we fought battles back then.
Uh-huh. About parking, Tom?
Parking is free. There's mm-hmm. parking at the park, Fort Lowell Park itself. Also, Gregory School has graciously allowed us to use their parking lot. There's a shuttle back and forth between the park and the San Pedro Chapel. And the other event I want to plug is at San Pedro Chapel. Dan Buckley, who is our working on a project called The Mariachi Miracle, is working on a documentary. He is the former art critic and music critic at the Tucson Citizen, since they ceased publication. And Dan is going to do a lecture on mariachi music. So this is the Gringo's Guide to Mariachi. Immediately after that, Los Aguilitas de Davis Elementary, the magnet school, the bilingual magnet school, will perform. And this is not going to be your average grade school recital. These kids are to mariachi music, musical form, as Little League baseball is to baseball, as Pop Warner football is to football. These are absolutely some of the best. This is the farm team where the mariachi miracle, where the mariachi tradition is carried on in Tucson. And Tucson played a very pivotal role in the extension of the appreciation of mariachi. And Dan, you'll have to attend Dan's lecture to find out what that was.
All right, Tom Collier, thank you very much. Fort Lowell Day is this Saturday.
Noon to 4.
We didn't mention the special vintage baseball game.
Oh, yeah.
10:30 in the morning, and then 12:30 they're going to do old-timey baseball.
And they play by the 1860s rules.
Oh, really?
Yes. Mm. You don't have a pitcher. You have a hurler.
Okay. That's for another story, another topic. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Bill. We really appreciate it. Come see us.
All right, Buckmaster in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. I am so excited about this Tucson History Podcast. I love history anyway, and we just, it's a nice segue. Greg Gerringer is with us. Greg is the ACE production manager here at KVOI. And Greg, we just had Tom Collier from the Old Fort Lowell Neighborhood Association. And so we were talking about history and all that rich history around Fort Lowell Park and the, many of the descendants of the people who were at the original fort, which was decommissioned in 1891, are still around. And this is this 40th anniversary is coming up Saturday. And I know you love history, too. And tell us where the podcast, we had you on originally after the first History Project podcast went up. Where are we right now with it?
Well, we've done two since then. We've done a one about where are our freeways, which, of course, featured the history of the lack of freeways here in Tucson, or some of the things that prevented them from getting built, and then also plans for the future and what that might look like. And then we did a bonus podcast that's rather short about Farewell to the Malls, which is a little bit about the history of malls here in Tucson, starting with Elkhorn in 61, kind of going through Park Mall in 75, the building of Tucson Mall in 82, Foothills Mall, the changes that occurred with all of those, and then what we're looking at towards the future as we see malls continue to decline. I think I saw a thing today where they said that as many as 900 of them could close by 2022.
Yeah, and Macy's announced yesterday, I think I've got this number straight, within the next year or two, 125 stores will be closing as they continue to downsize their brick-and-mortar operations. Greg Gerringer, what do you think about Tucson as far as how much life expectancy is left in the malls here in town?
Well, without
some people are saying, "Oh, next year." No, I don't think so.
Without any changes whatsoever,
right?
You'd be talking about 10 years, but there are going to be bigger things that occur. Counting on national tenants to fill your mall, those days are over.
Right?
The infill, the attrition that's occurred at the malls is not going to experience infill. You lose a gap, which you did at Tucson Mall. You've lost the one at Park Place as well. Banana Republic closing at Tucson Mall. And it's only a matter of time before that happens over at Park Place. Mm-hmm. So they built the Round One Game Center there at Park Place Mall. Mm-hmm. That's probably helped them somewhat. They're putting in the Harkins 14-screen theater at Tucson Mall. Mm-hmm. FHM Properties that owns Foothills, they have big urban village plans.
Right.
They really want to build that out with different types of residences, some larger condos, some smaller condos. They want to put hotels. They want to do all new retail, specialty markets, probably specialty food markets, things like that. They want to go for an upscale vibe, but they also want to do the whole live, work, shop in one area, you know, more pedestrian foot traffic, ride your bike, and then eventually maybe see those areas connected with high-speed transit of some sort.
It's ironic that the mall really was born out of the automobile and people getting away from the downtown. Now it's people just wanting to stay home and do their shopping at their computer. And so that's what's really driving the nail in the coffin for the malls. Quickly, let's turn to what you've got coming up. We have Statehood Day. Not only is Friday, next Friday, Valentine's Day, but it is also the day that Arizona was admitted to the United States of America.
February 14th, 1912, and it's the 108th anniversary. Our podcast covers that period of time from 1861 when Tucson and Southern Arizona and Southern New Mexico together as a territory seceded from the Union, and were part of the Confederacy for almost a year. The Arizona Organic Act in 1863, signed by Lincoln, makes Arizona a territory that includes northern and southern Arizona. And we talk about the time Tucson spent from 1867 to 1877 as the territorial capital. And prior to that, it had been in Prescott. It returned to Prescott for a few years. 1889, it moves to Phoenix. In the podcast, we have Marshall Trimble, who's the official Arizona State historian. He tells some pretty colorful stories about the lobbying that occurred. Some story
about who got what.
Correct. The 1885 thing.
Horse trading going on between Phoenix and Tucson. But in those days, Tucson had the power.
They did have the
over
power.
Phoenix.
They very much, because there was very little in Phoenix. I mean, in 1870, there were almost 9,000 people in Tucson.
Right.
In and around Phoenix, a few hundred.
Mm-hmm. And we got the university. Was there some folks that weren't happy about that?
There were, because $100,000 was being handed out for the Arizona State Sanatorium.
Uh-huh.
What was the insane asylum?
Ooh, that was a big piece to get.
Phoenix
then, huh?
wanted that, and then they wanted a normal school, a teaching college.
Uh-huh.
They got both those because our delegates were late to the convention. We got the consolation prize of the land-grant university, and the delegates, when they made their way back into town, were literally pelted with rotten vegetables by shop owners.
Oh, my God. Tell me something, and maybe you can answer this. I've heard this term, normal school. And is that usually associated with teachers' colleges?
Yes, and it's very much a case. I went to Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia.
Right.
That was a normal school and was always in the shadow of West Virginia University, which was the land-grant school.
Okay.
And the same thing. People at ASU for many, many years felt inferior because they were Arizona State Teachers College.
Right.
We were the University of Arizona.
Yeah.
But back in those days, you know, it was
but
a different story.
It's still that, you know, I went to the common school. It just makes it... that's kind of what a normal school seems like. You know, I'm at the common. It's a common term.
I think if you look around the country, a lot of the schools that started, the ones that started as normal schools were always in the shadow of the big land grant school.
Okay, where can we get hear these podcasts
from Arizona from Territory to Statehood? We'll be up probably next Thursday. So the 13th, KVOI.com, Google Play, and also at Apple Podcasts, you can find all of our podcasts.
And you don't have to invest a half an hour or an hour to hear these programs?
No, they're very short. The Malls episode is just over 8 minutes. The Statehood podcast is about 16. The other two, Freeways and Crash, are both just a little over 20 minutes.
All right, Greg Gehringer, our production manager. We're so happy and honored to have Greg on our team here at Bustos Media. Greg, you do a great job. I want to acknowledge that publicly.
Thank you very, very much, Bill. It means a lot coming from you.
Thank you very much. The Buckmaster Show, wrapping it up, midweek edition. On behalf of Greg Gehringer, and I don't want to forget him, Tom Fairbanks, making sure everything stayed on track on this noon hour on the Buckmaster Show. Okay, we're going to talk money with Dave Ramsey. That's coming up after CBS. Find out what's going on with the latest, with the impeachment vote that I think is coming up at within several hours. Anyway, that's coming up. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon and evening.